In the late 1980s, the great American jazz musician Charlie Hayden met a young Cuban pianist named Gonzalo Rubalcaba. Hayden became a kind of mentor figure to Rubalcaba, who wound up becoming a major jazz figure in his own right. Now, Charlie Hayden died a couple of years ago, but shortly before that, he dug out some old recordings of two concerts that he and Rubalcaba played in Japan. The album was recently released. It's called Tokyo Adagio. Steve Paulson has been listening to it a lot, and he got in touch with Rubalcaba to talk about it.
2 years before Charlie passed away, I think he was looking at some of the recording he did, live recording he did in the past, and he found those tapes. And he called me and he said, I found this, and I know you have it too, and I would like you to listen to that. And let me know if you agree to release that, because I think it's a beautiful music.
So he knew he was dying at that point. He knew that this would be coming out right around the time, or maybe even after he actually died.
He knew that he was very sick. But at the same time, I think Charlie was a very strong person inside. So I think he assumed that he could, you know, go ahead. So I just follow him and I agree what he wants to do. Because we have more than the large and deep professional relationship we had, also we have a very important human relationship, personal relationship.
And you had known him for what, 20 years or so? You'd worked with him on various projects.
Yes. Yeah. We met in 86 in Havana, jazz festival in Havana.
And you were very young at that time, right? What, 23 years old, something like that?
About that, yes. I remember he plays first with his band, and then I played with my band after that. And when we finished, he came back to the stage, and then he said, we should play. We had to find a piano and a place where we can jam a little bit. And then the next day, we went to the studios. This is a studio recordings in Havana. And we spent like 3 hours playing. He asked the guys there to record that jam, that moment. He took that cassette, and he showed that cassette to Bruce Lumbau.
At Blue Note Records.
And Blue Note Records. So Bruce came to Havana in 89 with the idea to sign me. And it was impossible because the embargo and all the...
So there was no American record company that could sign a Cuban musician. I mean, you had to do it through other means.
Exactly. So they talked to EMI Toshiba in Japan. They asked them to sign me. And they required to see a concert because they didn't know about me. So we played in Montreal in Switzerland in 1990, a concert with Charlie and Paul Motion. And then the Japanese came to see the concert. When we finished the concert, they decided to sign me. Doing that way, Blue Note could release those albums in the United States because it was coming from a Japanese record company.
A way to get around the restrictions, the American law. You played with Charlie Hayden for years. And as you said, it was more than just a professional relationship. It was, I mean, you two were very close. He was much older than you. He was a jazz legend. What was it like to play with Charlie Hayden?
I learned a lot musically, but also about life, because we were able to talk, not only to play, but to talk, and to talk about everything, music, family, economy, business, politics, everything.
Now, the music on this album, Tokyo Adagio, it's very meditative, and it's just the two of you on piano and bass. There's a lot of stillness here. How would you describe this music?
It's part of the moment where the intimacy was one of the most important elements in this duet. Charlie was always open to work with different composers, no matter age or nationality or styles. So you see the program, we have just one piece from Charlie, which is Sandino, but also we have a very emblematic bolero from Mexico, which is Solamente Una Vez, and one of my pieces from the 80s that I have to say that when I composed that piece, Transparence, I was really stimulated by Charlie's vision about music, how to do music, how to play music, how to produce sound. Charlie had that capacity to say a lot with very little elements. He was able to show and to convince the people how deep was his music, how clear was his message, with very few elements. He was a very spiritual person. And maybe that was the first and the most important point to us to connect. I always say that the music, we cannot lie with the music we do. The music is exactly in 90% what we are.
This is fascinating to hear you say this. I mean, do you feel that while you're playing? I mean, do you feel a spiritual connection with Charlie Hayden as the two of you are making music together?
Definitely. When you play a piece of music, and then this person has understood what you did, what you're trying to say musically, and he became part of that, adding the other portion we need, he's connected with you in some way. It happened with Charlie every time we play. It was maybe the factor, the element that keep us working together for a long, long time.
Back up for a moment and ask a bit about your own personal history. You grew up in Havana, Cuba. You come from a family of musicians. Your father was a famous musician in Cuba. Did you grow up playing jazz?
I found jazz when I was about 12 or 13 years old, when I discovered that my family had very old vinyl albums from Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker or even older. Jimmy Dorsey, Benny Goodman, and also at the school. I mean, in Cuba, the music school we had is totally 100% classical.
So you grew up actually playing classical music. You only discovered jazz later.
But I found some students around that they were already involved in improvisation, jazz improvisation.
Was jazz even played much at this time? I mean, we're talking post-revolution Cuba. What did people think about jazz in Cuba at that time?
At that point in the 60s and also the early 70s, there was a lot of control about what kind of music we should hear in Cuba. Jazz and rock and roll and pop music and everything coming from the United States or from any capitalist country, the music from those countries, it was seemed like the music of the enemy.
I want to pick up the threads of your own story. You left Cuba. You moved to the United States. You settled in Florida, where you still live. Why did you choose to leave Cuba?
I'm part of one more generation that understood that Cuba at some point became very limited to develop the kind of life, family life, professional life we wanted.
But even once you did eventually move to Florida, I've heard that you had some tough times in those early years. I mean, there were a lot of Cuban exiles in Miami who were really angry at you because you did not denounce Castro. And sometimes they would protest your shows. They spit at people who went to your concerts. They threw bottles at people. It must have been a really hard time.
Well, this is maybe the price to keep and maintain your own way to describe your memories, your story, and your own way to be critical or not. The point that I found here in Miami at that time, I'm talking about 96, I refused to talk about Cuba in the way I heard, because I believe that things in life are not black and white. maybe that position and to talk about Cuba was what provoked that reaction.
So you're basically saying it was not possible to have a more nuanced response to Cuba. I mean, you, especially living in Miami, you were just, if you were not an outspoken opponent of Fidel, you were going to get in trouble.
I wasn't the only one. I think I was part of a generation that had the same position. And not because we were ignoring the situation inside of Cuba. We know exactly what happened in those 50 years in Cuba. I'm 52 years old. I know exactly how the people in Cuba feel, how they think, what they need. But if I start in Cuba, and I had in the 80s and the 70s, people that train me, I mean, at the school, I have a great teachers, I have people that help me to develop as a musician, I think I should say that.
Yeah.
So I'm clear about everything. But I think I have the right to speak and to say what I believe has been part of my reality.
So what's your take on this whole process of normalizing relations between these two countries, between the United States and Cuba? Do you think that will really open things up musically between the two countries?
I think it would be a very slow process. It would take time. Considering that 55 years of the same mental structure. So I think it's great to develop all those steps of a relationship between Cuba and United States. But my opinion is that I think would not happen quickly. It would be a long process.
Jazz pianist Gonzalo Rubalcaba is now an American citizen living in South Florida. His new album with the late Charlie Hayden, called Tokyo Adagio, has just been released 10 years after it was recorded. Steve Paulson talked with him.